Demons, Fyodor Dostoevsky. Chapter 7. Stepan Trofimovich's Last Wandering. I am persuaded that Stepan Trofimovich was terribly frightened as he felt the time fixed for his insane enterprise drawing near. I am convinced that he suffered dreadfully from terror, especially on the night before he started, that awful night. Nastasya mentioned afterwards that he had gone to bed late and fallen asleep, but that proves nothing. Men sentenced to death sleep very soundly, they say, even the night before their execution. Though he set off by daylight, when a nervous man is always a little more confident, and the major, Virginsky's relative, used to give up believing in God every morning when the night was over, yet I am convinced he could never, without horror, have imagined himself alone on the high road in such a position. No doubt a certain desperation in his feelings softened at first the terrible sensation of sudden solitude in which he at once found himself as soon as he had left Nastasya, and the corner in which he had been warm and snug for 20 years. But it made no difference. Even with the clearest recognition of all the horrors awaiting him, he would have gone out to the high road and walked along it. There was something proud in the undertaking which allured him in spite of everything. Oh, he might have accepted Varvara Petrovna's luxurious provision and have remained living on her charity. Komang, humble dependent. But he had not accepted her charity, and was not remaining. And here he was, leaving her of himself, and holding aloft the standard of a great idea and going to die for it on the open road. That is how he must have been feeling. That's how his action must have appeared to him. Another question presented itself to me more than once. Why did he run away? That is, literally, run away on foot, rather than simply drive away. I put it down at first to the impracticability of 50 years and the fantastic bent of his mind under the influence of strong emotion. I imagined that the thought of posting tickets and horses, even if they had bells, would have seemed too simple and prosaic to him. A pilgrimage, on the other hand, even under an umbrella, was ever so much more picturesque and in character with love and resentment. But now that everything is over, I am inclined to think that it all came about in a much simpler way. To begin with, he was afraid to hire horses because Varvara Petrovna might have heard of it and prevented him from going by force, which she certainly would have done, and he certainly would have given in, and then farewell to the great idea forever. Besides, to take tickets for anywhere, he must have known at least where he was going. But to think about that was the greatest agony to him at that moment. He was utterly unable to fix upon a place, for if he had to fix on any particular town, his enterprise would at once have seemed in his own eyes absurd and impossible. He felt that very strongly. What should he do in that particular town rather than any other? Look out for ce marchand? But what marchand? At that point, his second and most terrible question cropped up. In reality, there was nothing he dreaded more than ce marchand, whom he had rushed off to seek so recklessly, though, of course, he was terribly afraid of finding him. No. Better simply the high road. Better simply to set off for it, and walk along it, and to think of nothing so long as he could put off thinking. The high road is something very, very long, of which one cannot see the end, like human life, like human dreams. There is an idea in the open road. But what sort of idea is there in travelling with posting tickets? Posting tickets mean an end to ideas. Vive la grande route, and then as God wills. After the sudden and unexpected interview with Lisa, which I have described, he rushed on, more lost in forgetfulness than ever. The high road passed half a mile from Skvoreshniki, and strange to say, he was not at first aware that he was on it. Logical reasoning or even distinct consciousness was unbearable to him at this moment. A fine rain kept drizzling, ceasing and drizzling again, but he did not even notice the rain. He did not even notice either how he threw his bag over his shoulder, nor how much more comfortably he walked with it so. He must have walked like that for nearly a mile or so, when he suddenly stood still and looked round. The old road, black, marked with wheel ruts and planted with willows on each side, ran before him like an endless thread. On the right hand were bare plains from which the harvest had long ago been carried. On the left there were bushes, and in the distance beyond them, a copse. And far, far away, a scarcely perceptible line of the railway running aslant, and on it the smoke of a train, but no sound was heard. Stepan Trofimovitch felt a little timid, but only for a moment. He heaved a vague sigh, put down his bag beside a willow, and sat down to rest. As he moved to sit down, he was conscious of being chilly and wrapped himself in his rug, noticing at the same time that it was raining. He put up his umbrella. He sat like that for some time, moving his lips from time to time and firmly grasping the umbrella handle. Images of all sorts passed in feverish procession before him, rapidly succeeding one another in his mind. "Lise, Lise," he thought, "and with her Sir Maurice. Strange people. But what was the strange fire, and what were they talking about, and who were murdered? I fancy Nastasia has not found out yet and is still waiting for me with my coffee. Cards? Did I really lose men at cards? Among us in Russia in the times of serfdom, so-called. My God, yes. Fedka!" He started all over with terror and looked about him. What if that Fedka is in hiding somewhere behind the bushes? They say he has a regular band of robbers here on the high road. Oh, mercy, I'll tell him the whole truth, then, that I was to blame, and that I've been miserable about him for 10 years, more miserable than he was as a soldier, and I'll give him my purse. J'ai en tout 40 roubles. Il prendra les roubles, et il tuera tout de même. In his panic, he for some reason shut up the umbrella and laid it down beside him. A cart came into sight on the high road in the distance, coming from the town. Grâce à Dieu, that's a cart, and it's coming at a walking pace. That can't be dangerous. The wretched little horses here. I always said that breed. It was Pyotr Ilyich, though. He talked at the club about horse breeding, and I trumped him, et puis. But what's that behind? I believe there's a woman in the cart. A peasant and a woman. Cela commence à être rassurant. The woman behind and the man in front. C'est très rassurant. There's a cow behind the cart, tied by the horns. C'est rassurant au plus haut degré. The cart reached him. It was a fairly solid peasant cart. The woman was sitting on a tightly stuffed sack, and the man on the front of the cart, with his legs hanging over towards Stepan Trofimovitch. A red cow was, in fact, shambling behind, tied by the horns to the cart. The man and the woman gazed open-eyed at Stepan Trofimovitch, and Stepan Trofimovitch gazed back at them with equal wonder. But after he had let them pass 20 paces, he got up hurriedly all of a sudden and walked after them. In the proximity of the cart, it was natural that he should feel safer, but when he had overtaken it, he became oblivious of everything again and sank back into his disconnected thoughts and fancies. He stepped along with no suspicion, of course, that for the 2 peasants he was at that instant the most mysterious and interesting object that one could meet on the high road. "What sort may you be, pray, if it's not uncivil to ask?" the woman could not resist asking at last, when Stepan Trofimovitch glanced absent-mindedly at her. She was a woman of about 27, sturdily built, with black eyebrows, rosy cheeks, and a friendly smile on her red lips, between which gleamed white, even teeth.
You are addressing me? Muttered Stepan Trofimovitch with mournful wonder.
A merchant, for sure,
the peasant observed confidently. He was a well-grown man of 40, with a broad and intelligent face, framed in a reddish beard.
No, I am not exactly a merchant. I moi c'est autre chose.
Stepan Trofimovitch parried the question somehow, and, to be on the safe side, he dropped back a little from the cart, so that he was walking on a level with the cow.
Must be a gentleman, the man decided,
hearing words not Russian, and he gave a tug at the horse.
That's what set us wondering. You are out for a walk, seemingly,
the woman asked inquisitively again.
You ask me?
Foreigners come from other parts sometimes by the train. Your boots don't seem to be from hereabouts.
They are army boots,
the man put in complacently and significantly.
No, I am not precisely in the army.
What an inquisitive woman, Stepan Trofimovitch mused with vexation. And how they stare at me.
Mais enfin. In fact, it's strange that I feel, as it were, conscience-stricken before them, and yet I've done them no harm.
The woman was whispering to the man.
If it's no offence, we'd give you a lift, if so be it's agreeable.
Stepan Trofimovitch suddenly roused himself.
Yes, yes, my friends, I accept it with pleasure, for I'm very tired. But how am I to get in?
How wonderful it is, he thought to himself, that I've been walking so long beside that cow, and it never entered my head to ask them for a lift. This real life has something very original about it. But the peasant had not, however, pulled up the horse.
But where are you bound for?
He asked with some mistrustfulness. Stepan Trofimovitch did not understand him at once.
To Hatovar, I suppose.
Hatov?
No, not to Hatov's exactly. And I don't know him, though I've heard of him. The village of Hatovar. The village, 7 miles from here.
A village? C'est charmant. To be sure, I've heard of it.
Stepan Trofimovitch was still walking. They had not yet taken him into the cart. A guess that was a stroke of genius flashed through his mind.
You think, perhaps, that I am... I've got a passport, and I am a professor. That is, if you like, a teacher. But a head teacher. I am a head teacher.
Oui, c'est comme ça qu'on peut traduire. I should be very glad of a lift, and I'll buy you a quart of vodka for it.
It'll be half a rouble, sir. It's a bad road.
Or it wouldn't be fair to ourselves, put in the woman.
Half a rouble? Very good, then. Half a rouble.
C'est encore mieux. J'ai en tout 40 roubles, mais...
The peasant stopped the horse, and by their united efforts, Stepan Trofimovitch was dragged into the cart and seated on the sack by the woman. He was still pursued by the same whirl of ideas. Sometimes he was aware himself that he was terribly absent-minded and that he was not thinking of what he ought to be thinking of, and wondered at it. This consciousness of abnormal weakness of mind became at moments very painful and even humiliating to him.
How is this you've got a cow behind?
He suddenly asked the woman.
What do you mean, sir, as though you've never seen one?
Laughed the woman.
We bought it in the town, the peasant put in. Our cattle died last spring, the plague. All the beasts have died round us, all of them. There aren't half of them left. It's heartbreaking.
And again he lashed the horse, which had got stuck in a rut.
Yes, that does happen among you in Russia. In general, we Russians... Well, yes, it happens,
Stepan Trofimovitch broke off.
If you were a teacher, what are you going to Hatovar for?
Maybe you were going on farther.
I'm not going farther, precisely. C'est-à-dire, I'm going to a merchant's.
To Spasov, I suppose.
Yes, yes, to Spasov, but that's no matter.
If you are going to Spasov and on foot, it will take you a week in your boots, laughed the woman.
I dare say, I dare say. No matter, mes amis, no matter.
Stepan Trofimovich cut her short impatiently.
Awfully inquisitive people. But the woman speaks better than he does, and I notice that since February the 19th, their language has altered a little. And what business is it of mine, whether I'm going to Spasov or not? Besides, I'll pay them, so why do they pester me?
If you are going to Spasov, you must take the steamer, the peasant persisted.
That's true indeed, the woman put in with animation, for if you drive along the bank, it's 25 miles out of the way.
35.
You'll just catch the steamer at Ustyevo at 2 o'clock tomorrow, the woman decided finally. But Stepan Trofimovich was obstinately silent. His questioners, too, sank into silence. The peasant tugged at his horse at rare intervals. The peasant woman exchanged brief remarks with him. Stepan Trofimovich fell into a doze. He was tremendously surprised when the woman, laughing, gave him a poke, and he found himself in a rather large village at the door of a cottage with 3 windows.
"You've had a nap, sir?"
"What is it? Where am I?" "Ah, yes, well, never mind," sighed Stepan Trofimovich, and he got out of the cart.
He looked about him mournfully. The village scene seemed strange to him, and somehow terribly remote.
"And the half-rouble, I was forgetting it," he said to the peasant, turning to him with an excessively hurried gesture. He was evidently by now afraid to part from them. "We'll settle indoors. Walk in," the peasant invited him.
"It's comfortable inside," the woman said reassuringly.
Stepan Trofimovich mounted the shaky steps.
"How can it be?" he murmured in profound and apprehensive perplexity.
He went into the cottage, however.
"Elavulu!"
He felt a stab at his heart, and again he became oblivious of everything, even of the fact that he had gone into the cottage. It was a light and fairly clean peasant's cottage, with 3 windows and 2 rooms, not exactly an inn, but a cottage at which people who knew the place were accustomed to stop on their way through the village. Stepan Trofimovich, quite unembarrassed, went to the foremost corner, forgot to greet anyone, sat down, and sank into thought. Meanwhile, a sensation of warmth, extremely agreeable after 3 hours of travelling in the damp, was suddenly diffused throughout his person. Even the slight shivers that spasmodically ran down his spine, such as always occur in particularly nervous people when they are feverish and have suddenly come into a warm room from the cold, became all at once strangely agreeable. He raised his head, and the delicious fragrance of the hot pancakes with which the woman of the house was busy at the stove tickled his nostrils. With a childlike smile, he leaned towards the woman and suddenly said,
"What's that? Are they pancakes? Mais, c'est charmant. Would you like some, sir?"
the woman politely offered him at once.
"I should like some. I certainly should. And may I ask you for some tea, too?" said Stepan Trofimovich, reviving.
"Get the samovar?" "With the greatest pleasure."
On a large plate with a big blue pattern on it were served the pancakes, regular peasant pancakes, thin, made half of wheat, covered with fresh hot butter. Most delicious pancakes. Stepan Trofimovich tasted them with relish.
"How rich they are! And how good! And if one could only have un doigt d'eau de vie. It's a drop of vodka you would like, sir, isn't it?" "Just so. Just so. A little. Un tout petit rien."
5 farthings worth, I suppose?"
"Five, yes. Five, five, five. Un tout petit rien,"
Stepan Trofimovich assented with a blissful smile. "Ask a peasant to do anything for you, and if he can and will, he will serve you with care and friendliness. But ask him to fetch you a vodka,
and his habitual serenity and friendliness will pass at once into a sort of joyful haste and alacrity. He will be as keen in your interest as though you were one of his family. The peasant who fetches vodka, even though you are going to drink it and not he, and he knows that beforehand, seems, as it were, to be enjoying part of your future gratification. Within 3 minutes, the tavern was only 2 paces away. A bottle and a large greenish wine glass were set on the table before Stepan Trofimovitch.
"Is that all for me?" he was extremely surprised. "I've always had vodka, but I never knew you could get so much for 5 farthings.
He filled the wine glass, got up, and with a certain solemnity crossed the room to the other corner, where his fellow traveller, the black-browed peasant woman who had shared the sack with him and bothered him with her questions, had ensconced herself. The woman was taken aback and began to decline, but after having said all that was prescribed by politeness, she stood up and drank it decorously in 3 sips, as women do, and, with an expression of intense suffering on her face, gave back the wine-glass and bowed to Stepan Trofimovitch. He returned the bow with dignity, and returned to the table with an expression of positive pride on his countenance. All this was done on the inspiration of the moment. A second before, he had no idea that he would go and treat the peasant woman.
"I know how to get on with peasants to perfection, and I've always told them so," he thought complacently, pouring out the rest of the vodka, though there was less than a glass left.
It warmed and revived him, and even went a little to his head.
"Je suis malade tout à fait, mais ce n'est pas trop mauvais d'être malade."
"Would you care to purchase?" a gentle feminine voice asked close by him. He raised his eyes, and to his surprise saw a lady.
Une dame est-elle en avait l'air?
Somewhat over 30, very modest in appearance, dressed not like a peasant, in a dark gown with a grey shawl on her shoulders. There was something very kindly in her face which attracted Stepan Trofimovitch immediately. She had only just come back to the cottage, where her things had been left on a bench, close by the place where Stepan Trofimovitch had seated himself. Among them was a portfolio, at which he remembered he had looked with curiosity on going in, and a pack, not very large, of American leather. From this pack she took out 2 nicely bound books with a cross engraved on the cover, and offered them to Stepan Trofimovitch.
"Eh, mais je crois que c'est l'Évangile, with the greatest pleasure. Ah, now I understand. Vous êtes ce qu'on appelle a gospel woman. I've read more than once. Half a rouble?"
35 kopecks, answered the gospel woman.
"With the greatest pleasure. Je n'ai rien contre l'Évangile, and I've been wanting to reread it for a long time."
The idea occurred to him at the moment that he had not read the Gospel for 30 years at least, and at most had recalled some passages of it 7 years before, when reading Renan's Vie de Jésus. As he had no small change, he pulled out his 4 10-ruble notes, all that he had. The woman of the house undertook to get change, and only then he noticed, looking round, that a good many people had come into the cottage, and that they had all been watching him for some time past, and seemed to be talking about him. They were talking, too, of the fire in the town, especially the owner of the cart, who had only just returned from the town with the cow. They talked of arson, of the Spigulin men.
"He said nothing to me about the fire when he brought me along, although he talked of everything,"
struck Stepan Trofimovitch for some reason.
"Master Stepan Trofimovitch, sir, is it you I see? Well, I never should have thought it. Don't you know me?"
exclaimed a middle-aged man who looked like an old-fashioned house serf, wearing no beard and dressed in an overcoat with a wide turn-down collar. Stepan Trofimovitch was alarmed at hearing his own name.
"Excuse me," he muttered, "I don't quite remember you." "You don't remember me. I am Anisim, Anisim Ivanov. I used to be in the service of the late Mr. Gaganov, And many's the time I've seen you, sir, with Varvara Petrovna at the late Avdotya Sergeyevna's. I used to go to you with books from her, and twice I brought you from Petersburg sweets from her.
Why, yes, I remember you, Anisim, said Stepan Trofimovitch, smiling.
Do you live here?
I live near Spasov, close to the V Monastery, in the service of Marta Sergeyevna, Avdotya Sergeyevna's sister. Perhaps your honour remembers her. She broke her leg falling out of her carriage on her way to a ball. Now her honour lives near the monastery, and I am in her service. And now, as your honour sees, I am on my way to the town to see my kinsfolk.
Quite so, quite so. I felt so pleased when I saw you. You used to be so kind to me.
Anisim smiled delightedly.
But where are you travelling to, sir? All by yourself, as it seems. You've never been a journey alone, I fancy.
Stepan Trofimovitch looked at him in alarm.
You are going maybe to our parts, to Spasov?
Yes, I am going to Spasov.
Il me semble que tout le monde va à Spasov.
You don't say it's to Fyodor Matveyevich's. They will be pleased to see you. He had such a respect for you in the old days. He often speaks of you now.
Yes, yes, to Fyodor Matveyevich's.
To be sure, to be sure. The peasants here are wondering. They make out they met you, sir, wandering on the high road. They are a foolish lot.
Yes, you know, Anisim, I made a wager, you know, like an Englishman, that I would go on foot, and I...
The perspiration came out on his forehead.
To be sure, to be sure.
Anisim listened with merciless curiosity. But Stepan Trofimovitch could bear it no longer. He was so disconcerted that he was on the point of getting up and going out of the cottage. But the samovar was brought in, and at the same moment the gospel woman, who had been out of the room, returned. With the air of a man clutching at a straw, he turned to her and offered her tea. Anisim submitted and walked away. The peasants certainly had begun to feel perplexed. What sort of person is he? He was found walking on the high road. He says he is a teacher. He is dressed like a foreigner, and has no more sense than a little child. He answers queerly, as though he had run away from someone, and he's got money. An idea was beginning to gain ground that information must be given to the authorities, especially as things weren't quite right in the town. But Anisim set all that right in a minute. Going into the passage, he explained to everyone who cared to listen that Stepan Trofimovitch was not exactly a teacher, but a very learned man, and busy with very learned studies, and was a landowner of the district himself, and had been living for 22 years with Her Excellency the General's widow, the stout Madame Stavrogin, and was, by way of being the most important person in her house, and was held in the greatest respect by everyone in the town. He used to lose by 50s and 100s in an evening at the club of the nobility, and in rank he was a councillor, which was equal to a lieutenant colonel in the army, which was next door to being a colonel. As for his having money, he had so much from the stout Madame Stavrogin that there was no reckoning it. And so on, and so on.
Mais c'est une dame très comme il faut, thought Stepan Trofimovitch, as he recovered from Anisim's attack, gazing with agreeable curiosity at his neighbour, the gospel peddler, who was, however, drinking the tea from a saucer and nibbling at a piece of sugar.
Ce petit morceau de sucre, ce n'est rien.
There is something noble and independent about her, and at the same time gentle. Le comme il faut tout pur, but rather in a different style.
He soon learned from her that her name was Sofia Matveyevna Ulitin, and she lived at K, that she had a sister there, a widow, that she was a widow too, and that her husband, who was a sub-lieutenant risen from the ranks, had been killed at Sevastopol.
But you are still so young. Vous n'avez pas 30 ans.
34, said Sofia Matveyevna, smiling.
What? You understand French?
A little.
I lived for 4 years after that in a gentleman's family, and there I picked it up from the children. She told him that, being left a widow at 18, she was for some time in Sevastopol as a nurse, and had afterwards lived in various places, and now she travelled about selling the gospel.
Mais mon Dieu! Wasn't it you who had a strange adventure in our town? A very strange adventure.
She flushed. It turned out that it had been she.
C'est vaurien, c'est malheureux,
he began in a voice quivering with indignation. Miserable and hateful recollections stirred painfully in his heart. For a minute he seemed to sink into oblivion.
Bah! But she's gone away again, he thought with a start, noticing that she was not by his side. She keeps going out and is busy with something. I notice that she seems upset, too. Bah, je deviens égoïste.
He raised his eyes and saw Anisim again, but this time in the most menacing surroundings. The whole cottage was full of peasants, and it was evidently Anisim who had brought them all in. Among them were the master of the house and the peasant with the cow, two other peasants, they turned out to be cab drivers, another little man, half-drunk, dressed like a peasant but clean-shaven, who seemed like a townsman ruined by drink and talked more than any of them. And they were all discussing him, Stepan Trofimovich. The peasant with the cow insisted on his point that to go round by the lake would be 35 miles out of the way, and that he certainly must go by steamer. The half-drunken man and the man of the house warmly retorted,
"Seeing that, though of course it will be nearer for his honour on the steamer over the lake, that's true enough, but maybe according to present arrangements the steamer doesn't go there, brother."
"It does go, it does. It will go for another week," cried Anisim, more excited than any of them. "That's true enough, but it doesn't arrive punctually, seeing it's late in the season, and sometimes it'll stay 3 days together at Ustyevo. It'll be there tomorrow at 2 o'clock punctually. It'll be at Spasov punctually by the evening," cried Anisim, eager to do his best for Stepan Trofimovich. "Mais qu'est-ce qu'il a cet homme?" thought Stepan Trofimovich, trembling and waiting in terror for what was in store for him.
The cab drivers, too, came forward and began bargaining with him. They asked 3 rubles to Ustyevo. The others shouted that that was not too much, that that was the fare, and that they had been driving from here to Ustyevo all the summer for that fare.
"But it's nice here, too, and I don't want—" Stepan Trofimovich mumbled in protest. "Nice it is, sir, you are right there. It's wonderfully nice at Spasov now. And Fyodor Matveyevich will be so pleased to see you. Mon Dieu, mes amis, all this is such a surprise to me."
At last, Sofia Matveyevna came back, but she sat down on the bench, looking dejected and mournful.
"I can't get to Spasov," she said to the woman of the cottage.
"Why, you are bound to Spasov too, then?" cried Stepan Trofimovich, starting.
It appeared that a lady had the day before told her to wait at Hatova, and had promised to take her to Spasov, and now this lady had not turned up after all.
"What am I to do now?"
repeated Sofia Matveyevna.
"Mais, ma chère et nouvelle amie, I can take you just as well as the lady to that village, whatever it is, to which I've hired horses, and tomorrow—well, tomorrow we'll go on together to Spasov."
"Why? Are you going to Spasov, too?"
"Make a fair, et je suis enchanté. I shall take you with the greatest pleasure. You see, they want to take me. I've engaged them already." "Which of you did I engage?"
Stepan Trofimovich suddenly felt an intense desire to go to Spasov. Within a quarter of an hour, they were getting into a covered trap, he very lively and quite satisfied, she with her pack beside him, with a grateful smile on her face. Anisim helped them in.
"A good journey to you, sir," said he, bustling officiously round the trap. "It has been a treat to see you. Goodbye, goodbye, my friend, goodbye. You'll see Fyodor Matveyevich, sir. Yes, my friend, yes, Fyodor Petrovich, only goodbye."